Today, my message will kind of tailor in with what we heard in Speaking of Life and what Greg Williams talked about. If you had to choose which of the disciples you could identify with the most, who would you choose? Who would it be? You know, it's amazing how many people pick Peter. A lot of people, I like Peter. The Apostle Peter, Simeon, Cephas, Petroas, gets the most airtime of any of the apostles. He's probably the favorite. And like many celebrities of today, his life was on public display, wasn't it? Every time he stumbled in the doorway, somebody wrote it down. Every time he spoke or put his foot in his mouth, somebody wrote it down. Someone was around to record it. I guess, ironically, that's what makes Peter our favorite. Because we can identify with him. Because don't we do the same things many times? We put our foot in our mouth. We get ourselves in trouble. And we can see ourselves in him. We love him for his mistakes as well as his victories. There's been a lot of talk about Peter in the history books. Who was Peter anyway, and what did he do? The Catholic Church says that Peter was the first pope. However, many would say in the New Testament that that was not the structure of the church in the New Testament as we read in Acts. So many would disagree with that. From a personal point of view, we envy Peter, don't we? We envy his boldness, his courage. I love the next slide here. It was a stormy day and they were all in the boat and Jesus comes walking to them on the water. And what does Peter say? Can I come out there? And Jesus says, come. And what did Peter do? He got out of the boat and he literally walked on the water. It says he walked on the water. And then he began to think, like, what am I doing here? It's like you're on a boat to Vancouver Island and it's a little bit stormy. And you get out and start walking on the water. He said, this isn't possible. I can't do this. And he begins to sink and Jesus rescues him. But we got to admire Peter for his boldness, don't we? I think all the other disciples said, boy, Jesus is walking on the water. I wonder if I could do that. Peter was the only one that said, I want to go. And he stepped out boldly and did it. We got to admire him for that. Some would identify maybe with other of the disciples. Some would say, I like the Apostle John. He was loved by Jesus. He was always there. Sometimes a little in the background, but he was there. Or maybe Thomas. We could be like Thomas. We are a little more skeptical. Okay, Jesus, I need a sign. I need you to show me. Is this really true? I need some kind of a sign here so I can believe you. Many of us are thankful that Jesus didn't wait till our day to choose one of us to be someone he wrote about. Because how would you or me like our lives' accounts written down in the book of Acts? Well, there goes Jim, or I'm not, I hope there's no Jims here. But there goes so-and-so, and they're doing this, and it's written down, we fell again, or we did that. I think none of us would really like that. But thankfully, in Peter we see someone who is thick-skinned. We see a person where his mouth often outran his brain. And he said things, and often the same things that many of the other disciples were probably already thinking. Peter was the one to blurt it out. The other disciples kind of were a little more reserved and didn't say anything. We hear in Peter, we see a disciple of the people, a man who sinned boldly and yet was a good representation of humanity. Today I want to look closer at Peter. Someone who Jesus called the Rock or Rocky. He called him the Rock. We look at the way his close to the skin temperament was cherished and changed by God. We look at how his great mistakes and also his amazing insights at times. And we look at how an uneducated middle-class redneck became a focused, bold preacher who walked through hell and high water to lead the church. When you look at Peter's background, he was not some sophisticated, educated person. He was a blue-collar worker, a fisherman, And I don't know if you know any fishermen that work at the docks all day long. He was not what you'd call the educated kind of person. Let's start with Peter's calling, or his early life. We know from John 1 that Peter and his brother Andrew were born at Bethsaida. It means in Hebrew, house of fishing, and it was on the shores of Galilee. Peter would have grown up fishing, probably learning the trade from his dad. In a village where he lived, there were people of all worldviews. Maybe one of his early chores was sorting out the fish when he was a boy. The catfish and the unclean ones would be sold to the Gentiles, and the clean fish they would sell to the Jews. Peter likely spoke some Greek, Aramaic, and maybe could understand a few other languages, as he'd probably come in contact with sailors from other areas. He would have been what they call the Amharites, the people of the land, a derogatory term used by the educated classes to talk about blue-collar working men and women. He lived in the sea. That was Peter. He was always in the water. People who make their living in the water are like farmers who make their living off the land. And there's something magical about these people. When it comes to the water or the land, they seem to have a few extra tricks up their sleeve. You know, Peter all his life had been on the water, studying the waves. He probably could read the weather pretty good. He understood everything. Yet, when it comes right down to it, there is an X factor. There's still a gap that has to be bridged by intuition, instinct, and plain old gut feeling. And this is the kind of person Peter was. He had a lot of gut feeling as to, this is right, this is wrong. And it was like he was, you know, that was the way he was. He isn't the educated finery of Paul, nor is he the mysticism of John. He's the guy who calls him like it is, sees him, trusts his instincts. That was Peter. He just called it like it was. I don't know if he was Dutch or German. I'm German background. My wife is Dutch, so I can get away with that. In Luke 5:1-3, we read, one day as Jesus was standing by the Sea of Gennesaret, the people were crowding around him, listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the people. And I think the next picture here is a good scene of what it might have looked like. Jesus is being surrounded by a crowd, so he hops in one of the boats. And if you don't think of this as a problem, you know, just to hop in some boat, think about going to somewhere and, you know, go to the mall and hop on a shiny Harley, and they'll be quick to say, you know, you're not supposed to be in there. It's not yours. It's not. Or we can imagine what Peter was thinking when this stranger, because he wasn't called yet, this stranger hops in his boat, tells him to row away from the shore a little so he could start preaching. Imagine what was going through Peter's mind. Maybe bring it a little closer to our world. You know, your home in your high rise or your apartment. And you get a knock on the door. And a stranger comes in. He's got one of these megaphones. He says, excuse me, can I come in? He walks right by you, goes on the balcony, and he begins to preach to your neighborhood. You would be a little bit awkward, wouldn't you? What is this guy doing? This is my house. Peter said, this is my boat. Or you're driving in Stanley Park, and you have a pickup truck. And suddenly a guy hops on the back of your truck and starts preaching to the neighborhood. You would be, you'd almost say, you know, what are you doing on my truck? Please get off. Call the police or whatever. That's bringing it down to our world. We would feel a bit awkward or edgy. But there's still more. If that was not enough, after being rowed off the shore so he could teach the crowd, Jesus looks at Peter and tells him how to do his job. He tells Peter how to do his job. Now, Peter had been out, remember, fishing all day long. He wasn't very successful, didn't catch anything. And this preacher comes along and says, here, I'll tell you how to fish. We read about this in Luke 5:4-5. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we worked all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. Maybe it was something in Peter that responded to this man. Maybe he was moved by what Jesus taught. Maybe if Peter was thinking, if this guy was bold enough to jump into my boat, maybe I should listen and give him a shot. Maybe nothing else was working, so I'll try it. Maybe Peter and his co-workers had been mending the nets, which were a laborious part of the day. They were cleaning their tools. And Jesus says, okay, let's go back out there. That was the last thing they probably would have wanted to do. In Luke 5, 6 to 7, we read on. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. They came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. The catch here was unbelievable. Many of us would like to have fishing stories like this. We generate our own sometimes. Peter knew that this was not an ordinary situation. There was something happened here that was out of the ordinary. And his reaction is so much like Peter, isn't it? We read in Luke 5, 8 to 11. When Simon saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. Peter saw there was something holy about this man. And where he said, you know, at first his first response was, "Go away from me, I'm a sinful man." And then what did he do? He dropped everything and followed him. I love that. That's also the new DVD series we're going through, Follow. And that's what Jesus Christ asks us to do, to follow him. It's more about following him than doing. It's more about living as he lived and following in his footsteps. We have to admire Peter and envy him once again. How many times has we got to admire him? For how many times has Jesus come and sat down in the middle of what we're doing? We could be working something or doing something. And Jesus comes to us in the middle of what we're doing, where we're in charge or we think we're in charge, and he says, follow me, or do this, or try this. He has a better way. Have I listened to that better way that he wants to lead me to? Maybe it's the counsel that others have given me. Do I listen to the counsel that others give me? Is my response the same as Peter's? Forgive me, Lord. I am a sinful person, because all of us fall short. And have I dropped all I have to follow his lead? Following is so important. I know we think the world revolves around us and we get bent out of shape over our issues, but Jesus said, follow me. I want to teach you. I want to give you. I have much to give you. What about us today? How is Jesus interrupting our life today? What is God or the Lord throwing off balance in our lives where we need to pay attention to? You know, had Peter not been the impulsive, drama-hungry guy we know and love, he might never have become the great apostle that Jesus knew he would become. What might be preventing you or me from being the disciples that Jesus wants us to be? What's preventing us from being the disciples that he's calling us to be? And this is just the beginning for Peter. Peter had wonderful moments, and yet there were times when his mouth outran his brain. Sometimes great errors and sometimes great truth. Let's look at a couple examples of Peter in Matthew 16, 13 to 16. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, Who do the people say the Son of Man is? They replied, some says he's John the Baptist, others says Elijah, and others said Jeremiah or one of the apostles or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked. Who do you say I am? Notice none of the other apostles spoke up because they didn't want to maybe make a mistake or put their foot in their mouth. But Peter blurts out, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Peter wasn't afraid to speak up. He spoke out. Here we find Jesus and his disciples coming to this region of Caesarea Philippi, and he asked them this question. And it was Peter that responded. Look what Christ's response to Peter that is found in the next three verses. Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind in earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." And as Greg was talking about today, about this area of Caesarea Philippi, this is what the area sort of looks like today, but there's a grotto there, which was, if you go to the next slide, it was one of the, in the time of Christ, that had a bunch of pagan temples in that area. It was a place that, as Greg said, the Las Vegas of Israel, where people went and did, there was a lot of licentiousness going on in that area, and a lot of things that were wrong. It was a place where the Greek pan god was celebrated. A place full of idols, people dancing, partying, offering sacrifices to their gods. And as usual, Jesus knows exactly what he's doing and is intentional in bringing the disciples here. If he was going to be a political leader, he would have taken them to maybe the Senate building or one of the main areas of government. If he was going to be a military leader, maybe he'd take them to a battlefield, to a place that is aching with a human need for the divine. And here Peter blurts out the words in his gut feeling and hope that you're the guy. You're God. You're the Messiah. It is here that Jesus gives his boisterous, unpredictable friend a name and calls him Rocky. If you were in charge, you might have given him another name from some of the things we read about him at the start. Maybe it was Hothead or Firebrand or whatever. But Jesus calls him a rock. But what does Jesus tell Peter? He says, "You are a rock, strong and stable, worthy to lead my church." And from his murky brain, Peter blurts out what his heart wants to say. And yet in this very same chapter, almost in the next words, Peter's lack of impulse gets him into a jam. Let's read on. In Matthew 16, 21 to 26. "From that time on, Jesus began to explain to the disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life." Oh, Peter. Peter looked at him and said, no, Lord, you're the Messiah. This is not going to happen to you. No, never you, Lord. You are..." And what does Jesus say? He says, "Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Then Jesus says to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. But whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for somebody to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anybody give in exchange for their soul?" Quite a different conversation just shortly after. I don't know if this was exactly in that same area, but it's written very close to it. Maybe it might have happened even the same day. We don't know. The main problem here is Peter is trying to apply his old understanding, his old instinct into evaluating things. He sees things like very clearly sometimes, but sometimes they're clearly wrong. The disciples saw Jesus as the fulfillment of their dreams. He was the Messiah. It's what they'd grown up hoping for. And he would obviously be a political warrior. He would be the new king. He would establish his kingdom there. He'd get rid of the Romans. That's the way they saw Jesus. Is it any wonder why Peter felt strongly that, you know, this is not going to happen to you, Lord? No, no, I'm not going to let this happen to you. You're the Messiah. You're a king. So with Peter, poor Peter, we see one moment Jesus calls him a rock and he's on a high that he spoke out very clearly. And the next second, Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan, you're a stumbling block." And where Peter, what Peter said was not exactly correct. It's interesting how quickly the contrast or the change happens. You know, Peter sometimes is impulsive and knows exactly what is needed. And he's the only one with the guts to speak out sometimes. And at other times, he's way off his mark. He isn't paying attention. You know, one Bible commentator calls this a looking glass reality of what Peter had here of the kingdom. Have you ever looked in a mirror and you're going to tie your tie and you're looking down, but you're also looking up and you're trying to tie a tie in the mirror and you're, okay, I'll go to the left, but in the mirror, it's the other way. So it's always awkward because you're thinking I'm going to go left, but you're actually going right in the mirror. And it's sort of that mentality of what Peter had here. He was thinking he had it right, but it wasn't right. He was way off. And it sometimes for us, when we're doing that in the mirror, it takes reoriented. Peter is using the old paradigm to understand Jesus as Messiah. He's thinking Jesus is going to be a warrior. And the reason he wants to go to Jerusalem is he's going to take over. He's going to be king. What's this about him dying and being crucified? I don't know that. Jesus, you've got it wrong. So he's kind of correcting Jesus. How often does God upend our paradigms? We try to bring him under. How often does he turn our small view of reality on its head? We think that this is the way that's best, God. Answer this prayer and this is the best thing you could do, God, to fix this situation. God doesn't listen to us there because God's working over here. And that's the best thing for us. But we think we know the answers when we don't. God says, "Get those dumb ideas behind me. Get that narrow view out. My way of doing things is different than yours. It's much bigger. I have a much bigger worldview than you have of things." And so it takes Peter and a lot of us a lot longer to understand these things. Peter's hot temper ran against Jesus' kingdom. Think of the night that Jesus was arrested. That night a whole group of soldiers are dispatched to arrest a few fishermen. What a contrast. Dozens of soldiers armed to the teeth, carrying torches and weapons, coming to arrest a carpenter and his three buddies. Remember, we read about this in the account in John 18:10. When they came, what did Simon Peter do? He raised his sword, drew it, and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his ear. Again, they're coming to arrest Jesus. Who's the one that stands up? Peter, he's ready to go to bat for this Messiah. Well, he also thought that Jesus was coming to destroy everyone. So naturally, Jesus was not going to let anything happen to him because he was the Messiah and he was coming to rule. So Peter lifts his sword and he strikes Malchus. And as we know, Jesus healed him. What did Peter do next after this encounter? What did all the disciples do? Then Peter and all of the disciples fled. They all fled. However, we got to admire Peter because all the disciples scattered. But Peter, it seems, is the only one that kind of snuck into the temple courts where Jesus was being tried. The other disciples weren't to be found, but Peter snuck in there. He was, even after what had happened, he was still quite courageous and bold. And here's where he faces one of his most embarrassing moments in ministry. Jesus had told him that he would deny him three times when the rooster crowed, and sure enough, at the third crow of the rooster, this happened. And then Peter recalls what Jesus said. And we read in Luke 22:61, the Lord turned while he was on trial there. He looked straight at Peter. So Peter was very close to him. He wasn't kind of hiding somewhere else. He was maybe in the shadows a little, but Jesus knew he was there. And then Peter remembered the words the Lord had spoken to him, "Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." And Peter was broken at that moment because he knew that he had denied Jesus, the Messiah. He was the only one close enough to, he was the only one bold enough to come, it seems, to that hearing that Jesus was at. The rest of the disciples were probably back hiding in some room somewhere with the doors locked and trying to be inconspicuous. Soon after this, of course, Jesus asked Peter three questions. "Peter, son of Jonah, do you love me? Feed my sheep." And how many times did he ask him? He asked him three times, the same amount of times that he had denied him. "Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep. Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep." You know, many speculate that Peter and Paul were both martyred by the Nerodian persecution of the early church during the time of Nero. Tradition has it that Peter was crucified upside down on a cross, declaring, because he said, "I'm not worthy to die as Jesus Christ died." He died on a cross upside down. But before that happens, tradition has it that the Romans also crucified his wife right in front of him. And tradition has it that Peter yelled to his wife, "Remember, remember Christ, remember Jesus," in that as it happened. So it was not an easy life. So today, brethren, what can we learn from the Apostle Peter when we look at Peter the Rock? What can we take home from this amazing story? What does this teach us about Jesus and our relationship with him? I'd like to give 3 points of what we can learn from Peter. First one, God has dreams for you. God has dreams for all of us here. Jesus saw very quickly the kind of man Peter could be. And God used him in a very powerful way, because Peter desired to follow Jesus no matter what. And sometimes we look at ourselves and say, you think, "Well, I'm nobody, I'm not this or that." Neither were most of the disciples. They were not anything special. The only one that was probably the most educated was Paul. But the rest of the disciples were common people that Jesus looked at him and knew that he could make something special out of them. Remember that God has great dreams for you and great plans for you. He didn't choose you because he had nothing else to do. He saw you struggling. He saw you in your sin. He sees what you will become in this life, and he sees what you will become in the future life. He knows that you have tremendous potential, and he has great dreams for you, and he wants to share those with you. Secondly, God accepted Peter just the way he was. And guess what? He accepts you and me just the way we are today. He accepts us just the way we are. We don't have to change to get God's attention. For once he has our attention, he starts to change us from the inside out. Often through the mistakes that we make, he changes us. Peter learned from his mistakes and embarrassing moments, and we can too. Jesus wants to make you new, to transform you. He also loves who you are. He made you who you are. He made us uniquely us. And thankfully, there's only one of us. He made us all very unique in our own way, because you're special. Peter was still Simon the fisherman, even when he took leadership over thousands of people as he spoke his message in Acts 3. He was still Peter. And God used a very humble, down-to-earth fisherman to reach out to thousands of people. And number 3 point I'd like to leave you with is, we need to learn the great lesson of Peter to put ourselves out there, to step out with courage and boldness. You know, we might make great mistakes. That's something that we will do. And that's what happens when you sometimes step out. But there's a saying, it's better to love than lost than never loved at all. You know, if we are afraid to step out because we might make a mistake, we will never amount to anything. Peter stepped out in faith. Sometimes he misstepped and he messed up. But he had the courage to step out, and we need to do that. He left an example for us. Even after all his blunders, he was still there until the end. Peter taught us to get up, dust ourselves off, and to move on. You know, we stumble, we fall, we make poor choices sometimes, but we need to get up and keep on going. That's a lesson for us. And I love the words that Isaiah says in Isaiah 6:8. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." Is that our response? Is that our attitude when it comes to, you know, God, where do you want me to do? What, you know, where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do? Our response should be to walk as He wants us to, and to step out with courage and boldness. As we have studied the life of Peter, we are, despite our failings or successes, we need to be willing to go where God leads us. And we need to be willing to go where God wants us to go. And through all the mistakes and blunders, we know Jesus is faithful to us. And we are reminded to always remember Christ. Remember Christ. So I'd like to close in prayer if you bow your heads. Our Heavenly Father, we come before you at this time. Father, thank you for teaching us. Thank you for working with us. You know, we are like many of the other disciples you called. We are common people. There's nothing special or about us that really sometimes makes us shine. But Father, you've reached into our lives and said, "I choose you. I call you. I'm working with you. I have special plans for you. I have great dreams for you." Help us to understand that you love us no matter what, for who we are, and you accept us. So, Father, in conclusion, help us then, therefore, Father, to step out with the courage that Peter had, to step out with boldness, to carry on your work in whatever way you want us to carry it on, to be used by you in whatever way we can. And we thank you for all this now. We thank you for the blessings you give us. We ask a blessing on the meal we're about to have, and we ask all this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.